We're 40 games into the Rockets season, so we're going to be doing a mid-season review. So stay tuned and hear what we have to say. All right, and welcome to another episode of the Brighter and Will Show. I'm your first host, as always, Will. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at @BiasHouston. Over there, we do all the post-game spaces, just different discussions regarding the Rockets and Houston sports in general. And I'll quickly take this time to shout out the Brighter and Will page on Instagram and Twitter. And then you guys can continue to show us some love on YouTube. Really appreciate all of that. And with that, I'll pass off to Brad.
As always, I'm your second host, Brad. You can catch me on Instagram and Twitter at @BradOnNBA. All your favorite stats, highlights, always have you covered. And today's episode, before we even tap into the Rockets, because, you know, we're 40 games in, right? So we're going to be giving a mid-season review. Obviously, that's halfway through the NBA season. But, man, we are recording a day after the Texans did some questionable stuff. And my co-host, Will, wants to rant about that a little bit. I'll put in my quick 2 cents right after. But Will, what did you think about the Texans winning that game and forfeiting the first pick in the draft?
I know that we're mainly a Rockets podcast, and so we really only talk about the Rockets, but, like, I was so frustrated yesterday. Like, I was very, very upset, and I just had to come on the show and talk about it before we got into the Rockets stuff. You know, I've been mad at the Rockets all season long, but they have done nothing that, like, upsets me the way the Texans did yesterday. Right. And like, I'm not even that huge of like a football fan compared to like basketball. Like I'm a way bigger basketball NBA fan than I am a football, but like, man, so if you go back to like the end of last season for the Texans, that's kind of when Davis Mills kind of burst into the scene and everybody's like, okay, maybe this guy could be the next, you know, the next QB of the Texans. He'd be the next guy up, you know, who knows, this is going to be the season where he proves it. And so coming into this season, I don't think anybody thought we were going to be like a playoff team or anything really special. But, you know, I think like, I want to say me and you both said we're around like 4 to 6 wins to start the season.
We hopped on a different podcast. I said maybe like 5 wins, if that, yeah. 4. I think 4
was somewhere. Yeah, four. It's anywhere in that 4 to 6 win range, which was like kind of what I was expecting too from this Texan season. And so, you know, like I said, this is going to be the season where we're like, okay, like maybe we're going to see if Davis Mills is the quarterback of the future. We're going to see all these, you know, these rookies come in. You got Stingley, you got Petrie, you got Pierce. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this could be – it's going to be a fun season of, like, no expectations. We're probably going to surprise a team here or two. And it's just going to be, you know, it's going to be entertaining, right? And they come out week one against – that was against the Colts, right? Week one against the Colts. I mean, you know what I'm saying, just had that really questionable decision that was kind of controversial whether or not to go for the tie or go for the win, right? But, like, that decision right there kind of came back to bite us yesterday, right? Because yesterday let me even go back a little bit further. This whole season, the Texans have been – you know, I think that week one tie kind of summed up what the season was kind of like. It was just one big disappointment after disappointment. Davis Mills was not the guy who we thought he was. He was – you know, maybe about half of the season, I was like, yeah, like it's clear he's not the quarterback of this team no more. I figured out maybe half of the season that Lovie Smith was not going to be the coach next year. Like, you know, like it was completely disappointing. You know, the Texans were the most unclutch team I think I've ever watched in my entire life when it came down to like crunch time, interceptions here. Like, I want to say like he had one interception, he being Mills, for every like touchdown he threw for the first half of the season. Like it wasn't the product that I thought we were going to be watching this season. And I sat there and watched every game this year. You know, I really have no reason, I had no idea why, but I did. And so we come down to the last week of the season, and we've had this whole season of disappointment and being let down and, you know, fumbling in the clutch and not being able to make simple reads, simple passes, like just everything that could have went wrong has for the most part went wrong this whole season. And the one solace that we all had as Texans fans was, okay, at the end of the season, we're going to have the number one pick, right? And, you know, whether or not who you want with that pick is up for you. Like, I want Bryce Young, but, like, if you think CJ Stroud's better than him, cool. If you think Will Anderson's the pick, cool. Like, whatever it was, we were going to have the first pick in the draft, and we're going to get to decide, like, we're going to get the pick of the litter, whoever we wanted, even if we want to trade down. Like, you had that control to make that decision. And, like, that was the silver lining, was, okay, we watched this season. It was awful. Maybe Mills is not here next season. Maybe he is, you know what I'm saying? Whatever. But, like, at the end of the day, we're gonna have that number one pick. You know, that's the prize for watching this very bad product every Sunday. And all you have to do to secure it, right? Because of that tie, all you have to do to secure this number one pick was just lose against the Colts last week of the season. You're already at the playoffs. You're not really playing for anything anymore. I'm pretty sure Lovey knew he was gone at that point, so that's probably why he did what he did yesterday. But like, the season's over with, man. Like, there's no pride. There's no, you know what I'm saying? It's not like you gave yourself any like extra odds. Like, there's no logical reason to win yesterday's game. It's over. The season's done, right? And they go out there and play arguably their best football game all season long, which is like the part that just blows my mind. I've watched this team look like a complete, like a peewee team all season long, bro.
It's been bad, dog.
And they come out, and I mean, to the Colts' credit, I imagine a lot of that was because they were like not trying to win either. Like, you kind of tell the Colts weren't really trying the hardest, but right. Man, like, Davis Mills had his best performance all season long. The Texans' offense looked competent. I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, where was this all season long? Like, why did y'all decide to the one game where I need you to not do it? Is this thing gonna be trying to pull it out? And so, yeah, man, they go up real big, real early. I'm like, oh, man, they're about to win this game. Like, you know what I'm saying? They're about to mess up this number one pick. You done with this whole season losing. They're going to win this game. And then they stay in the second half. They start losing. They start coming. The Colts start coming back. And I'm like, okay, somebody put the call in. We're about to lose this game. Bryce Young's going to be a Texan. Like, it's about to be great. It's about to be good. And then they come down that final drive, bro. And I have, once again, the least clutch team I think I've ever watched in my entire life.
And then fourth and 20.
Fourth and 20, bro. Throw that Hail Mary with, like, the definition of I'm holding my hands and praying to God that somebody's down there and catches this. And they throw it and they catch it to not to win the game, right? That was 6 points to put the game within one since OT to win it, right? Go for the 2-point conversion, they get it, game over. And like, to me, it's like, when we watch this team every Sunday, when have they ever done anything even remotely simple? They don't do that. So like, for me, it was like, y'all waited till the one point in time where winning is actually a bad thing to do what you did, and they did it, bro. And so, like, I'm sitting there at home screaming inside my lungs, like, what are y'all doing? And like I said, to me, it's I'll land my plane here. It's what bothers me the most is not the number two overall pick, because like, there's still a world where, like, who knows, maybe the Bears don't trade the pick, right? Or maybe they do, and it seemed that, you know, takes them, didn't take Bryce Young or whatever. Like, if we end up with CJ Stroud or Will Anderson, it's not the end of the world, right? Like, who cares? But what bothers me the most is not the pick. It's the logic, man. Like, why on earth did you win that? It's the logic, and then it's like a slap to the face. I watched this team look incompetent all season long. And the one game where them looking incompetent would not only be the preferred outcome, but like actively encouraged, they do the opposite. And so I don't know, man. It was I got no more to say. I'll end my plan here, Brad. What you think about that Texans game?
Man, it's just funny. I'm sitting here watching the game. My roommate's like, wait, what's the situation? So I break it down to him, and I'm praying to God that they lose this game, man. Obviously, what happened. We'll gave a perfect breakdown. It doesn't make sense to me. We'll have to see what happens in the draft. You know, we want Bryce Young. We'll see what happens. They have to settle for CJ Stroud. This is what happens. So, I mean, it just, the logic, it wasn't there for me. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I understand these players are out there, and some of these guys don't have a guaranteed job. So from a player standpoint, I see these guys out here trying to win this game, especially Davis Mills, who knows he's about to get replaced. So he's trying to get his next job. He could care less about these Texas fans. So I respect the players going out there and doing what they had to do. It's just funny that they ended up actually winning this game and they couldn't win all season long. So that's what I have to say about it. But, you know, outside of the Texans, second worst team in the NFL officially. The Rockets, on the other hand, are the worst team in the NBA. Right now, as they've been the past two seasons. So they could be the first team. I don't know if it's the first team, but one of the first teams ever.
No, it's the first team
ever. It would be the first team ever.
We lose that record.
Okay. So they would be the first team ever, as I thought, to finish as the worst team in the NBA for a third year in a row. And we can talk about Silas's record as a whole right now during this. The first season, they went 17-55. Last year, and this year, they're 10-30. If you combine all that together, Steven Silas has the worst winning percentage of all time of any head coach in NBA history. Now, I will give Steven Silas slack. That first season was not his fault, right? They were okay to start. You know, they had the little six-game winning streak, and then after that, There were so many injuries. They played 30 total players, I think it was, Will.
Yeah, I think it was 30.
And that was an NBA record. And we're all saying after that first year, yeah, Silas, you know, you can't judge him after that. Last year, KPJ first point guard year, a lot of struggles. Okay, worst team again. But this year is where, you know, everybody is starting to lose faith in Steven Silas. And we're going to get into him first in our midseason review. We have no structured plan, but I feel like Steven Silas is a person to talk about first. And I want to talk about Rafael Stone right after that. But Will, what are your thoughts right now? Midseason review, man. Steven Silas, what are you thinking?
I mean, I don't like to ever call for anybody's job, especially a black man. But if it was, if I'm in charge, he's going to lose his job. He would not be my head coach any further. And for me, there's a whole, like, I can go on for like 10, 15, 20 minutes explaining all the issues I have with the Rockets this season and specifically Steven Silas. But I'm going to try to keep it concise and say that, like, on the surface level, man, I just don't see the team improving, right? Like that, to me, that's the biggest thing. I'm not saying that they have to play themselves out of Wemby, right? Because I know that's one of the things that the front office has kind of made pretty clear is that they want to, or that they've been explicitly said it, but you know, through different actions and, you know, sound bites here and there, you can kind of assume that they're trying to maximize their odds this year in the draft. The last year they can do because we don't own our picnic season. So, like, I get that. But, like, even beyond maximizing draft odds, I just don't see the team structure looking any different. We're still making the same mistakes we made last season. We're still seeing guys, you know what I'm saying, put their head down, not look up for the open man. I was talking in a special today. The bar for me right now and my enjoyment of this team has gotten so low that the Rockets have found – I'm going to say Texans. The Rockets have found a way to lower – my like expectations and my, you know, like the bar for me so low. So now if I just see them make an extra pass, if I see professional NBA players making extra passes, I'm like, oh yeah, good job team. Like we made an extra pass because we don't do that. And like I said this a couple of podcasts ago, but like I really want Rockets fans who are like under the assumption that this is like perfectly normal and acceptable, man, go watch some other teams, man. Cause it's like, it's night and day when you watch, not even the good teams, just even middle of the pack teams. You watch them play and you watch the Rockets play, and it's night and day how different it looks. And I do not subscribe to the idea at all that it's because we're young. I don't subscribe to the idea at all because there's not a true point guard on the team. It's the system, man. It's the system that we're running. It's what they're being told to do. Because like even my problems extend past offense, right? Like one of my biggest issues with the team right now is the overhelping on defense. We leave corner shooters open so much.
It's consistent, Will.
It's not one person, it's not two person, it's the whole team. The starters, the bench, when the third shooter's getting in, they do the same thing. That's what they're being told to do. And so for me, it's like, all right, well, like my problems have, you know, they're beyond the youth, they're beyond the point guard. And it's, I don't know, man. Like I said, I can't look at this team and say with much confidence, outside of like individual players getting better, I cannot say that we as a team look better than we did last year. And for me, that's the problem. The problem is that I can't say that we look better. And next season, we need to look better. Like we absolutely need to not look like the worst team in the NBA. And I don't think it's easy to just turn that switch. You know what I'm saying? You draft Scoot Henderson and the switch is just flipped. Like I don't think it's that simple. So that's why I think Steven Silas might need to go a little bit sooner than later. So we can start seeing those team improvements so that next season when it actually like matters, we're not trying to figure it out for the first time.
Yeah, and when I think about Steven Silas, I know I said we talk about Stone right after. I want to kind of assess them together. So with Steven Silas, the most important thing with me has been to, you know, look at this roster and hopefully they will find an identity. We discussed it on the show. And it comes with this roster and these guys not really being consistent. They never have a consistent game plan. It's always something different. Will and I have preached that we want these guys to run it through Şengün, and it's never that consistently, you know. Instead, you know, we get a lot of isolation basketball, and that's where this team, you know, that's where they had their downfall. That they'll start the game off, that they have nice ball movement, as Will said, you pointed out, and you go, oh yeah, it's good to see that. But it's bad that we get excited about those little things because they typically just revert right back to iso ball. They'll run a pick and roll. Maybe they'll run a set, and if they don't get to it, it's right back to iso ball, and they have no way to get out of it. We had offers post-game yesterday said these guys need to learn how to play the right way, specifically Jalen and Kevin Porter Jr. They need some veterans. And that's where I talk about Rafael Stone. You know, I like the young talent that he's acquired for this team, But if you look at this roster right now, look at the veterans. You have, you want to call Jae'Sean Tate a vet? Cool. Jae'Sean Tate's been in NBA 3 years. He's a professional before that. I can't really count him as a vet just yet. Eric Gordon, he is a vet that is going to do his job, and he's not really going to be one of those vets that's going to teach you that many things, from what I've heard. Boban Marjanovic, that's just a good locker room guy. Outside of that, they don't have any vets. This team doesn't have any vets. It's straight young guys, straight guys, 23 and under. So what are they learning? Who are they learning from? Just the coaching staff. You need those guys in the locker room that's going to help you. And this Rockets roster doesn't have any of those guys, and that's the reason why they suck so badly too. You can't win games without any vets, and it's bad development to not have that many vets in the locker room. So that's something that's not Silas's fault. I think what Silas's fault is just the inconsistencies on offense. And maybe that just comes from being some young players out there. But there's a lot of questionable decisions that Silas has made. And sometimes I just can't go for it. Just, you know, for instance, taking Şengün out the game for too long, running three center rotations when it cuts, you know, Şengün's minutes and you can't, you know, come up with an idea to play, who to play situationally. It was a time. It was just Bruno coming in the second quarter or the second stint, and then Grub in the first stint. And sometimes in the second stint, they'd have the bigger center playing, or they would have the smaller center playing in the second stint, and they would still put Bruno out there instead of matching him up with Grub. But it just didn't make sense to me. Like, if you're going situational, might as well pair, you know, Bruno with a bigger center and Grub with a smaller center. It was just like they were just structured. Like, yeah, y'all go out there and do this. It reminded me of like a five-in, five-out kind of thing. Like, they already knew what they were doing. There's no situational basketball. It's just things like that. Calling timeouts in the right place, wrong time. Like, Steven Silas, look, and I said that I was going to assess them together. Stone has not given Silas a lot to work with, and I'm not mad at it. Again, it could be frustrating, but I know Stone is getting a young roster and trying to build on that next season. But for Steven Silas, there's nothing he could do with this roster. I think anybody who had this position was going to be put in a position to fail. Just having no vets, it's going to be bad. But Silas is still at fault for a lot of things as well. Just there's a lot of inconsistencies, as I've mentioned. Will, do you disagree, agree with anything I'm saying?
Also, I agree with your premise and overall that, like, whoever was going to be tasked with coaching this team was not going to be able to produce too much of a winning record, right? Like, that's one thing I talk about all the time with, like, Stone. His, by design, the team is bad, right? There's not a true floor general. There's not really any rim protection. There's no vets. Like, by design, the team is not supposed to be good. So, like, whoever was coaching it was never going to be able to, like if somebody coached this Rockets team to the playoffs, like, they're the greatest coach of all time, because, like, that means they were able to extract, like, every good quality out of every player on this roster. Right. But with even with that lowered metric, I think Steven Silas has failed to meet that. And that's one thing I forgot to say earlier was, like, I feel like on top of everything that you talked about too, I feel like we have found a unique way to misuse every, like, promising prospect on this team. Like, I think it's kind of in, like, you couldn't try to misuse the guys better than we have. By, like, forcing KPJ to be James Harden, Chris Paul when he's not, or Luka Doncic when he's not that guy yet, if ever, it's unfair to him. You're setting up for failure. You're asking Jalen Green to run a lot more pick and rolls and a lot less handoffs. And, like, that's kind of what he was drafted to do. He was drafted to be an off-ball guard. So, like, I understand that you want him to learn how to handle and run an offense at some point in time, and you want to kind of, like, catch him up to speed on that. But, like, that's all we have him doing. Like, I can't remember the last time we seen Jalen Green, like, just get a DHO attack off of that, man. Like, it happens so rarely these days. A lot of what Jalen Green does now is him attacking, like, off the dribble, just isolating, scoring, and making reads off of that. Like, that's cool. That's definitely what he's learned how to do. But, like, he's still young. He's learning how to do that. So, like, making that his only shot diet, using him wrong. Şengün is not Clint Capella. Right, he's not going to be setting screens and rolling to the basket all the time. I understand it's something you want him to be able to do eventually. Cool, right? But, like, especially when the offense is not looking good as we're running it currently, switch it up, man. Like, you got a guy 6'10", 6'11", maybe down there in the post who clearly, like, when every time we run through him, it works and it looks pretty nice. Like, let's stop trying to make him something that he's not. Let's run through him. Like, you know what I'm saying? And then Jabari. I'm actually okay with Jabari's usage. I think he's been fine, but I don't know, man. You get what I'm saying? Like, I feel like we've misused some of the guys on our team, and I think it's kind of like it's insane how much they've been misused. And I think that's part of the reason why it looks as bad as we did. And then to touch on Stone, then I'm done on that. I think I'm someone who I think Stone's done a pretty solid job as general manager. But like the one or actually two things that he does that I do think he needs to like sharpen up on is I think he holds on to assets way too long. Like I think Eric Gordon should have been gone by now. You know what I'm saying? I mean, obviously I'm not in the office. I'm not making the call. So for all I know, the offers aren't where we want them to be. But like you would just think, just looking at the market, looking around the league, like you would think a guy like Eric Gordon would have been traded by now. Like and probably for like what we want from him. I think he should have been gone. And you know, like one of the main reasons that he's been here is because like they say he's that veteran leader, and that's something we've been talking on the podcast before. Like that's just not who Eric Gordon is. I'm not gonna rehash it for the millionth time, but like that's not who he is. And so my next thing is like he should have brought in that kind of leader this offseason. We didn't need Eric Gordon. We needed not necessarily this guy specifically, but we needed a Rondo, we needed a Pat Bev. We needed a PJ Tucker, Udonis, somebody like that who's going to get in the young. That's what Austin Rivers said. Someone's going to get in their ears. Hey, man, you tripping. Hey, man, you pick your spots better. Here's a way to do that. That's what we need. And, like, all due respect to Eric Gordon, but that's not who he is. And so those are, like, as someone who I do think Stone's done a pretty solid job, like, he's failed to surround this team with the necessary, like, vets in the locker room, and then he holds on to assets too long. So I don't know. That's kind of where I am with Stone.
And I agree with you with guys being utilized the wrong way and the things of that nature. But one thing I will say about that, you know, Shane Goon coming into the season was not a pick and roll guy, and that's how they primarily use him. That does help his development, I will say, only because he was not really a good pick and roll player last season. And over the course of this year, he's gotten a lot better at that. I'll give them props there. But now, I mean, you should still primarily use him as a post guy, and they don't do that. So you're right. They utilize these guys the wrong way. As for Jalen Green, that jumps into our next topic. We're going to talk about Jalen Green this season, who is now averaging 21.2 points, and he has a shooting percentage of 40.6%, which is awful. And we're coming off of a game where Jalen just shot 4-15, only had 9 points, didn't attempt a single free throw. So his worst game of the season, Will may argue the worst game of his career, right? So
yeah,
a lot of people are concerned with Jalen Green. And the concerns are valid, but the first thing I wanted to say, when I think about Jalen Green being an inefficient young guard, I think about other young guards in the NBA who were also inefficient. And I jumped to Devin Booker right away, and I pulled the stat comparison right before the show, and I'm going to give it to you guys. Devin Booker, 40 games in. We're 40 games into the season right now. So Devin Booker, 40 games into his second season, same age as Jalen, by the way, was averaging 34.1 minutes, 20.4 points. Jalen Green was averaging 34.4 minutes and 21.2 points. So better than Booker there. And Booker had a 52.1 true shooting percentage. Jalen has a 52.9 true shooting percentage. So Jalen, in a little more minutes per game, 9 total minutes, has averaging more points, and he's more efficient than Devin Booker. So as bad as it seems right now, it's not the end of the world for Jalen Green. He's not just going to be a young, inefficient Jordan Clarkson for his entire career. There is a path for him to be very successful. And when he's utilized the right way and he's not taking extremely difficult shots, Jalen Green could be a really good basketball player. Everyone in here watches the Rockets. You guys see the shots that Jalen Green takes. If he's not hitting a spot-up three, he is taking an extremely difficult, off-balanced, going into the paint, taking an extremely difficult layup where he has to, you know, contort his body. Jalen Green, he's a special player, yeah, but he takes extremely difficult shots. Like, anybody who's taking shots like that consistently the entire game is not going to be that good every single night. I think of the game against the Bulls, he had an exceptional game. I want to say he had 5 or 6 threes. And if you go look at his highlights that game, he hit some ridiculous shots. And those are pretty much the same shots he's been taking in the last few games. He just hasn't been hitting them. Those aren't shots that you can hit on a consistent basis. You need somebody who's going to get you into your spots, and that goes into the roster construction as well. Or maybe a coach that can get these guys into the right spots. You know, Madison Madman Leaks on Twitter, we've had him on the podcast before. You can check out his page. He pointed out that Jalen Green is shooting 55% when he's coming off of handoffs and things of that nature. You know, those are things that he's good at. You know, getting he gets an advantage when he's coming off of those, whether it's in the midi or getting to the bucket. You know, there's a little things that he needs to do. Last year when he went on his streak of 30 straight points, he was better in the mid-range. And he doesn't take a lot of middies right now, but I feel like if he does take a lot more middies, as Madison pointed out on Twitter, it's going to open up his game a lot more. Some action in the paint and at the three-point line. I think there needs to be more of a balanced attack in the middle. But my main point with Jalen, I'll pass it off to Will, is comparing him to Devin Booker, you know, the stats, you know, they're very, very similar. So I'm not concerned about Jalen at all. I just think he's in a bad system where he's not utilized the right way, and he's around a bunch of young players. He doesn't have a vet that can really teach him the right way. Thankfully, he had John Wall last year for a little bit, even though they're on the same position. That helps a lot, as Kevin Porter Jr. noted. But going into next year, this Rockets roster, they're going to get a lot of vets, and I'd assume a new coach. So that's when I'll really assess Jalen Green. But Will, you concerned? How you feeling about Jalen?
Not concerned. I'm a little disappointed. I thought it was going to be a little better than this this season, but I'm not concerned. I mean, it's not unusual for players to have, like, sophomore slumps, and it's also not unusual for, like, as you pointed out, Brad, if you go look at a lot of the star shooting guards in the league, the Devin Bookers, the Bradley Beals, like, a lot of those guys who are kind of that same mold as Jalen Green, a lot of them kind of struggle. Like, his numbers look eerily similar to those guys' numbers at this point of their careers, so like, it's no reason for me to be concerned. But like I said, I am a little disappointed. A lot of it, I think, is out of his control. It is, like I said, with the misutilization of him, I think he's been used wrong. And then I do think he desperate, like I also remember something, hit the head on the nail. Like, he needs someone in his ear to, like, you know, because obviously, unfortunately, Silas isn't the one doing it, or if it is, it's not, you know, working. He needs someone in his ear who's going to tell him, like, hey, man, pick your spots better, you know, Here's how you can do that, right? Someone just to kind of get on him, who's going to kind of annoy him, but he needs to hear it, right? And, like, so I will say some of that is on, you know, on Stone, on Silas for not using him right and not getting him those proper bets. But I also have to, like, put some of that accountability on Jalen Green. He's just not playing well right now. And it's beyond, like I said, some of it is beyond the roster and the vets and the coaching. Like, it's some of it's just, like, Jalen's just not playing well. Like, I don't have to surround you with the best vets in the world, the best point guard in the world, the best coach in the world, for you to not, you know, miss an open three, which he's missing a lot of those right now, just wide open threes, knowing what I'm just missing, right? I you know what I'm saying? Like, his shot selection, I think that's one thing that coaching and the vet would fix, but, like, right now his shot selection is, I think, the worst I've ever seen it be. He's taking a bunch of, like, off-balance, contested shots. He's making finishing harder than it has to be. You know, if it's someone who's athletic and, you know, vertically gifted, As Jalen, you don't see him, like, you see him try to, like, Kyrie Irving it a lot, where he just, like, finish around contact instead of finishing through the contact, right? And it's like, well, I mean, I understand he's still growing into his NBA body, so it's not as easy to do that just yet. But still, like, he's not doing that as much anymore or at all. There's that. I was pleasantly surprised with, like, the playmaking leap he was showing to start the season. There was, like, that stretch, I forgot, you know, I think it was, like, in, like, November, where he was getting, like, 5, 6, 7 plus assists every single night consistently. And like, it was – you could, like – you would – you notice it. Like, he was making an effort to move the balls within the flow of the offense. It was looking nice. It was looking beautiful. I don't really see that no more, right? Like, you see it every now and then. He'll kind of try to do something. But the playmaking has not been consistent as it was, like, in November. It's – I don't know whether there was, like, a thing they told him to stop doing. I don't know what it was. It was, like, overnight – it just hasn't been the same. And the last thing I said that it's been puzzling, surprising to me for Jalen Green this season is he's getting to the line a lot more lately. Right? So his jumper isn't necessarily falling, but he is finding ways to get to the lane. He's starting to get respect of the whistle. And that's one of the things that we talked about last season, where once he starts getting, you know, to the free throw, once the refs start respecting him, he's gonna take off. So now, you know, all he has to do now for me is continue to get to that line the way he has been lately. Start taking some better, smarter shots. Coach, make it easier for Jalen to get some shots in the flow of the offense. And then I hope he doesn't forget how good he was at distributing the basketball a month or so ago. And if he just puts all of that together, I mean, we're still looking at a very special basketball player. So I'm not worried at all. I'm not concerned, but I, like I said, I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah, I definitely hear you. And another topic I do want to discuss is one of the scapegoats on Twitter. Coming into the season, we knew a scapegoat was most likely going to be Kevin Porter Jr. or Steven Silas. This year, it looks like it's both of them. But I want to say Kevin Porter Jr., you know, despite some early season struggles, he and Alperen Şengün are in consideration for the best player on the team. People had an issue with Kevin Porter Jr. calling himself a head honcho recently. But at the end of the day, if you're looking at what Kevin Porter Jr. Junior's been doing. He's been playing extremely, you know, good brand of basketball. He's been a lot better recently, keeping the turnovers down for the most part. He had a game where he had 22 points, 9 assists, and 0 turnovers. You can go through all of his games recently. For the most part, he's keeping those turnovers down, which is what's most important with Kevin. Now, it's still not consistent, but, you know, overall, the three-point shot has been falling. It's been a lot better in between. And, you know, when it comes to Kevin, I feel like he gets assessed unfairly for the most part. And, yeah, if you may not think he's a point guard, that's okay. But at the end of the day, he's a hell of a basketball player who's going to be a part of this young core in the future. And, you know, that's how I feel about Kevin. I don't really have a lot to say about him. I just feel like he has been viewed as a scapegoat on social media, where I typically see most of my Rockets takes. And, I just feel like he's viewed unfairly in that regard. Yes, he needs to keep turnovers down, but recently he has been playing a lot better, more complete basketball. That's how I feel about it personally. Will, you could touch on Kevin Porter Jr. if you want to, and then we could touch on Alperen Sengun right after.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief. I do feel like I agree with you that I think he's the scapegoat for, like, it, the on-court scapegoats. For obviously, Steven Silas is the catch-all, be-all as soon as it go right in general. But, like, as far as on-court goes, he's the one who people say, all right, you know, like, the ball was moving, KPJ's fault. Shots were falling, KPJ's fault. And I do think he gets kind of an unfair rep at times. Like, truth be told, I don't think that we are giving him the amount of respect he deserves for how well he's played lately, right? He's moving more off ball. He's getting more catch-shoot opportunities. The turnovers are starting to go back down. Over his last, and I'm going to round up here, but over his last 15 games, he's averaging 21.6 assists, 5 rebounds on 59.2 true shooting efficiency. So his efficiency is getting back up. He's cutting turnovers over the stretch. He's only averaging, 3.4 turnovers, which is still not, like, great or nothing, but, like, you know, like, for KPJ, that's him getting him down, right? That's a lot less than what he was doing before. So he's still learning. He's still making strides. He's one thing I'm noticing with him a lot lately is you can tell he's making the effort to keep the ball moving. Now, there are times where he'll get into the ISO bag, and I think that's kind of him falling victim to the system that we run. But there are, like, I can tell that KPJ is trying to get guys the ball. I can visibly see that now. And so my biggest issue with, like, the KPJ criticism is that it's warranted when it's warranted. When he's in the deep ISO bag and turn the ball over and not looking to move the ball, absolutely it's warranted at that point. I mean, he's definitely not above criticism. But lately, I think he's been playing, if it's not Alperen Sengun, he's been the best player for the Houston Rockets over the last, like, 15, 20 games. And he's been consistent. He's been efficient. He's getting the turnovers down. And it's the amount of criticism is not matching the amount of praise he should be getting for playing well right now. Like, I'm not saying he's playing perfectly. He still has room to improve. But like I said, I think he's definitely turning a corner here, and I'm just hoping that he can still build up on it as the season progresses. But yeah, that's all I'd say about KPJ.
Yeah. When it comes to Alperen Sengun, a guy who I mentioned already in this podcast and previous ones, this is a guy they really do not use the right way. So when assessing him, I just want to talk about his numbers, you know, when he's averaging 30 minutes a game. Will, we looked at it, I want to say last week. I may have put it on my social media. I can go to it really quickly to get the exact numbers. But when Alperen Sengun is playing 30 minutes, he's only played 30 minutes, maybe eight games now after the last one. But he's averaging at least 18 points, 12 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.1 block, 1.1 steals, and a shooting percentage over 60%. A true shooting percentage over, like, 65%. So absurd numbers. Like, these are really good numbers, promising numbers. We're talking 18, 12, and 3 on shooting over 60% from the field. This is when they typically feed him the ball in the post, maybe give it to him at the elbow, let him facilitate, let him, you know, do what he does in the post and just get buckets. That's LP right there. That's Alperen Sengun. Showed us this last season, and he always shows us this season when they use him the right way. I feel like a broken record when I say that, because we said it so many times. But when it comes to Sengun, if we're going to give him an honest midseason review, he needs to improve defensively, one. It's a fair criticism when it comes to Sengun. Yes, he does need to improve defensively. I think he could be better in drop coverage sometimes. I think some guys could help him more often in drop, you know, knowing he can't get back in time. But that's where he's struggled a lot. A lot of guys get a lot of lobs over the top on him. And sometimes he just needs to be able to hold his ground down there in the post. I think, you know, when it comes to building a championship roster, you need to have a rim protector. That's extremely important. And there's nothing more that I want than Alperen Şengün to be that guy, and he needs to improve defensively. Jokic, he may be 2 inches taller than Alperen Şengün, but he was awful when he came to the league on defense, and now he's at least serviceable. You know, he's not just a liability out there. He's gotten a lot better. Clint Capela used to work him. Not even in the post, just in general. Clint Capela had field days going against Nikola Jokic. I don't know if you know, Will, but I want to say Clint Capela started his career 15-0 against Nikola Jokic. And it was no coincidence.
It makes sense. Capela would routinely outplay the biggest, because he would just run. He would run and play hard, and Harden would find him. So it didn't shock me at all.
Yeah. But yeah, so Jokic, he's become a lot better defensively, my point. So I hope Alp can do the same. That'll come with muscle and, you know, more IQ on the defensive end. But outside of that, he also needs to stay out of foul trouble. That comes with, you know, being, you know, a better defender. I feel like a lot of times Alp, you could tell when you watch him, he does his best to stay vertical. I've watched him recently. He really tries his best to stay vertical, and sometimes he does not get the call. And that's the reason why he's always yelling at the referees. But for the most part, it comes from being out of position, and those little things have to improve. But outside of that, Şengün has improved from year one, and that's amazing to see, because Şengün has a lot of promise offensively. Offensively, he's extremely gifted. There's a reason people compare him to, you know, you could compare him to Jokic and Sabonis. Yeah, he's not those players, but there are some similarities there that you see, and he has an athleticism to him that a lot of players his size don't have. He will mess around and put you on a poster, as we've seen maybe 5 to 10 times this year.
He probably has more posters in like the Monster Ducks than Jalen does this season.
Which this man
kind of a problem. But
this man,
go ahead.
This man sent Zach Collins to the locker room after dunking on him. He almost had like a dunk from the dotted line against the Bulls, like things like that. He's dunking with authority. Post moves look good. last sign of improvement before I start coughing, I still do have bronchitis. He needs to get a jump shot and maybe a post fade. And if he does that, it's blouses on the offensive end. But go ahead, Will. I'm gonna take care of myself real quick.
I think you touched on a lot of the major points. I think that, one, there's a very valid argument to be made that right now, as of today, he's the best player on the Houston Rockets. I think it's definitely out of him and KPJ at this point. It's kind of just I guess which one you prefer. I think he's probably been the player who's been the most consistent this year with their minutes, outside of maybe KJ Morton. I think he's been the most consistent. He did have, you know, some rough stretches here and there. I agree with you, Brad, that he needs to, you know, continue to stay disciplined as a defender, going straight up, picking his spots better on the defensive end, you know, staying out of that foul trouble. But I also think that we don't use him the right way all the times, right? Like, there are times where the offense is really flowing and like he's kind of at the center of that. And then we just kind of completely go away from it. Or, you know, he'll be cooking somebody in the post. The guy cannot guard him at all. And then we go away from it. So I think a lot of, you know, Şengün's shortcomings, obviously the defensive end, like that's kind of is what it is. It's kind of been the criticism of him this whole time. But I feel like Şengün could be doing a lot more if we trusted him to do more. And that's kind of one thing that I think this team definitely, and I'm not saying that this is the wrong decision per se, but like the team definitely is kind of geared towards more of the Jalen Green, KPJ backcourt. And I think it could be more of like a holistic team approach if they kind of got Şengün involved. But yeah, like I think if you were to put Şengün on like the Spurs, man, a team that would allow him to be himself and kind of play his game, man, I think Şengün would be putting up some like insane numbers right now, bro. Because he's already putting up, like, I've been meaning to actually do this for a while, bro. I need you to look up like where he ranks compared to the second year players. Because I bet you he's in a pretty good mix right now, especially considering like the guys ahead of him are probably getting more minutes, more usage, more touches. He's probably doing like really well with his limited role on this Rockets team. And so I can only imagine, especially since I've seen him be able to handle more touches, more offensive load. And so I, like I said, I feel like if you were to put Şengün on a team that like the Spurs, like the, I mean, honestly, okay, see any team that would let him play his game, I think he would be like, he would be viewed a lot higher than he's viewed right now. And I think he's already viewed pretty highly amongst people who are familiar with this game.
Now, well, really quickly, I'll pull that stat for you. So give me an exact stat to pull. And while I talk
about it's like the points, rebounds, assists, just like the whole, like the general five stats or so. Where does he rank compared to sophomore players? Because like I said, I he may not be like at the top, but I imagine everybody who's ahead of him is probably like the Franzes, the Jalen's, guys who get more usage and more touches than him. So,
okay. Yeah, I'll pull that right after I talk about the last topic that we're going to discuss today, which is going to be just, you know, a mix of different topics. Will, whatever you want to dive into, you can. Like, for instance, I want to talk about Jayshon Tate coming back. I'm going to talk about Ty Washington, you know, Josh Christopher not playing as much. So, to start, it is good to have Jayshon Tate back. He showed how valuable he was. Just you know, the very first year the Rockets had him, he proved to be a utility guy. You know, when you think utility guy, you think of a player like Draymond Green, a guy who could play, you know, play make, just be an overall floor raiser and have a lot of energy out there. Jayshon Tate is one of those guys. And he just came back recently. He's only been two games, and he's been playing amazing. And these last two games, I just want to point out a quick thing before moving to the next topic. When he's playing out there with the Goon Squad, as you guys know, to be Usman Garuba, KJ Martin, and Tari Eason, when he's playing with those three guys and Kevin Porter Jr. in these last two games, the Rockets have their best net efficiency in the entire season. It's a plus 18.7 when those guys are on the court. So that's a lineup I look forward to watching. Jayshon mixes in perfectly. The, you know, the Goon Squad prioritize a lot of energy and effort, and that's exactly what you're going to get out of Jayshon Tate. So it's good to have him back. Another thing I want to touch on was Ty Washington. He's been playing really good in the G League. He had 19-8 to start this last game, and he finished with 25 points and 11 assists. And if you watch Ty Washington this year, he comes to the NBA setting, and he's a good facilitator, but he's really playing shy out there. He's playing shy basketball, not very assertive. I want him to tap into his bag a lot more. He's a good basketball player. He can hit some step back threes, some pull-up threes, some sidestep threes. Really good floater, a lot of no-look dimes. That is a skilled basketball player. So when he comes back onto the Rockets roster, I want him to be a lot more aggressive because he's a good player, and he'll pop, you know, out of the screen if he comes out there playing the way that he should. And lastly, with Josh Christopher, I know Willis touched on, he thinks he may be traded. It might be clipped for him on this Rockets roster. I may feel enticed to feel the exact same way. Yeah, he's not getting minutes on this roster. I don't see how he's going to be getting minutes on this roster when we bring in a bunch of guys and we should try to start winning games. So it's not looking good for Josh right now. I personally like Josh Christopher. He's a high-energy guy. He just wasn't working out on this Rockets roster, even though I would love to see him play over Garrison Matthews in his spot minutes. But Stephen Silas and this front office is prioritizing Garrison's spot minutes to come to space the floor. So it sucks because Josh looked really good last year, and he's not getting a lot of opportunity this year. But this is a guy I think may be, you know, moved in the offseason, sadly. Yeah, I know I said those were the three that I would touch on, but I might as well touch on the last two rookies, which is going to be Jabari Smith Jr. and Tari Eason. You know, as a midseason review, Jabari started the season off as a bust, you know, in quotations, and everyone was worried. And then Jabari came in, went on a crazy shooting streak, had like seven games in a row with three threes, which was an NBA record for a rookie. And even now, right now, he's not shooting the three ball the best, but he's improved in a lot of aspects. I think Will can agree with me there. I think he's handling the ball up a lot. He's handling the ball a lot better. His defense has been looking really good, turning defense into offense. And he just looks a lot more comfortable out there. He's moving a lot better within the flow of the offense, whatever offense the Rockets have. But yeah, he looks good in what he's doing there. And lastly, with Tari, you know, we all fell in love with Tari in the preseason. Tari, you know, high energy guy, a lot of offensive rebounds. But man, this I'll say this about Tari. I like him. I think he has a lot of promise. But this man, I feel like he's lost his touch at the rim. He struggles a lot at the rim. He's not a very good finisher right now. His field goal percentage is pretty bad for a rookie. And as I'm here, I want to pull it up for you guys. But Tari Eason, he goes for a lot of layups. He creates a lot of shots, as Will pulled up on his Twitter the other day. Probably one of the best rookies in the league. You know, top two or top three, right, Will, on that rim shot creation chart?
Yeah. He was either one or two. I think Jaden Ivey's the only guy ahead of him.
Yeah. So second best rookie at creating his own shots at the rim. But he was towards the bottom when it comes to finishing those. And really quickly, Tari Eason right now, as it's loading on my screen, is only shooting 42% on the season. And that comes from him missing a lot of layups and a lot of putbacks. But on the bright side, he's shooting 36.6% from three, which is an area that people thought would be a weakness when he got into the NBA. So he's shooting the three ball well, which is encouraging. But I would just like to see him finish a lot better. But outside of that, I love Tari Eason. Tari Eason is a great basketball player, good IQ. It's just the finishing, it's got to be better. But as a whole, that really wraps my review. 10-30 for the Rockets right now. As a whole, what I want to see going forward, Will, you can do the same when you wrap. I just want to see consistent ball movement. I don't want to see ISO, ISO, ISO. I don't want to see 24 minutes of ball movement, 24 minutes of ISO afterwards. I want to see these guys have a consistent game plan throughout the season. And if it's not going to happen, then get rid of Silas whenever necessary. And also trade Eric Gordon. Those are two things I need to happen, man. That's all I got to say for this episode. Go ahead, Will. Whatever you want to talk about, it's no specific topic.
No, I think you actually touched on a lot of what I was going to touch on. I was really going to talk about Tari Eason and like his tunnel vision and decision making, and then, you know, not being able to finish around the rim. But I think you kind of summed it up perfectly for me. I think Jabari has been demonstrating flashes of skill sets that we think was going to have this zone, which is pretty cool. But he's also somewhat disappointed me this season. I think that he, I don't know. I feel like I know he was going to not be the sharpshooter we thought, or not the sharpshooter we thought, the sharpshooter we all know he can be year one, especially not this early on. But I mean, he's missing the same thing with Jalen. He's missing a lot of just open, good looks, clean looks made up right for him. And like, I don't know, I feel like I would be disrespecting how good of a talent I think Jalen and Jabari are by like letting that stuff slide for them. I think they're a lot better, even in just year one and year two respectively, than what they've shown us. And like I said, Jabari, his angle for me is like, some of these shots, man, you're wide open, no one's near you, knock them down. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not even, I'm not asking you to be an elite shooter, but I don't even want to look at the numbers. I know it's bad, but I imagine he's probably shooting under 35%. Probably
from,
like
from what from the three, field?
Like from the three. No, from three. It's probably like under 30%. Honestly, isn't like the last one like 10 so games. It's you. Probably under 32.
Not in the last 10 games. Yeah. I'll look it up for you. I'll look it up for you. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, continue.
I mean, it's like I said. I'm afraid what's going to say. Exactly. Which I'm used to like 28 like that. It's probably really bad. And like even if I like factor in that he's a rookie still learning. When you look at the type of shots he's getting, where it's not like he's shooting, you know, off the dribble, difficult shots. No, man, he's getting wide open, top of the key, corner looks, like routine looks that NBA players who are good shooters can make. And so, like I said, I'm not expecting him to be, you know, 38-39%. But, I mean, man, to – like I said, I'm afraid of what Brad's going to say when he pulls it up. But I imagine –
it's loading right now. I got you. It is at – whoo, man. So give me a guess. What do you think it is? It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. Go ahead, though.
28.4.
Lower. 26.3 on 57 attempts. So as a whole, 57 last 10 games, yeah.
And how many is that per game? Like 5.7?
5.7.
5.7, yeah. I mean – I knew it was going to be bad. That's why I was afraid. What was the number again?
It's 15 of 57, so 26.3%. Yeah.
And those are, like I said, on wide open catch and shoot threes, man. It's so, like,
I will say, he has been taking some more contested ones as of late, especially in that last game. Despite him shooting this poorly from three, it doesn't concern me because I feel like he's shooting a lot more.
No, I'm not concerned at all either.
Yeah.
Man, I'm going to make that very clear that, like, with him or Jay, that I'm not concerned. It's just, like, it's just disappointing. I thought that they – like, I didn't think he was going to come out shooting that from three over his last team. Like, I didn't see that happening at all. And, like, it's probably even nasty if you go back even further. So, but, yeah, just with him, need to see him be more consistent with that. Other than that, like, no, I think he touched – oh, the Jayshon Tate stuff, I love what I'm seeing from Jayshon Tate. Like, he's only been here for two games, but his impact is felt. He's another guy who's out there always communicating, always talking to offense and defense and the guys where to be. His IQ is showing. He's been able to get guys involved. His effort's always there. He's not interested in shooting the best from three through two games, but, like, you know, I can see that maybe picking up sometime down the line. The one thing that I think is, like, pretty interesting is one of the biggest reasons that some of the people on Rockets Twitter wanted Jayshon Tate traded was because, you know, he's a 6'4 power forward, which is a little undersized for that position. Although, in my opinion, I don't think his height's never really low, like, hampered him. I think Jayshon Tate's done fine guarding all positions that he's been asked to guard. So, but that's one of the reasons people who were a lot on the trade Jayshon Tate train has been like, okay, 6'4, guarding against guys who are like 6'7 plus, like, maybe he shouldn't, you know, he's too small to be on this team. And I just wonder if, like, that opinion changes if he goes from playing power forward to more of like shooting guard slash point guard, because that's where he's ran or like spent most of his minutes since he came back from injury, right? Like, we've been running the lineups that Brad's talked about where it'll be like KPJ, Jayshon Tate, KJ Martin, Tari's, and Usman Garuba, with Tate being the shooting guard in that lineup, and like he looks comfortable and under control when the ball is in his hands. And so I just wonder if that opinion kind of on Jason Tate, whether we should trade him or not, like changes when you factor in he's clearly able to play more than just the fourth, and he's showing some guard flashes. We ran up at the small ball five before. He can guard, I think effectively he can guard one through four at some of the fives in the NBA. He's on a team friendly contract that like descends. Like I just wonder if like the opinion on Jason Tate changes with this kind of newfound discovery that he can indeed play a guard position. Something me and Brad talked about in the past of running him as like a guard with that bench in that kind of alleviates the need for Tayshaun Nix at the time. So I love what I'm seeing from Jason Tate. And then just as far as what I want to see, absolutely, I need to see Eric Gordon gone. At this point, it's for his own good. I mean, every time he's getting interviewed, you can just tell more and more he's not happy. He's a little frustrated. Let that man go. So, like, that's the first thing I need to see. I need to see him gone. And I would love to see Eric Gordon replaced with that kind of, like I said, the Pat Bevs, the not saying these guys can be available, but like the Pidgeot Tuckers, the Haslams, like somebody of that mold. Who's going to not, you know, so not sit idly on the bench. Someone's going to be loud and vocal and engaged in practices. I would love to see them bring in somebody like that. It's never too late to do that. And then, like Brad said, just I need to see some sort of improvement as a team, some sort of like team ball being played. I'm just, as a fan, I'm tired of watching the ISO at the top of the key for 24 seconds. Like, I don't know. It's not fun to watch. It's not good hoops. And so, if you know, see that change. But, you know, like I said, it's going to be a tough season. I expect it to kind of pick up a little bit post All-Star break. But, you know, here we are halfway through the season. And I'll give the season like a letter grade. I give it like a C. Like it's just hasn't been the worst season in the world, but it definitely has not been good. So, yeah, I'll give it a C.
I'll say this. Well, I'm surprised that you give them a C. I'm thinking maybe a – you know, again, this is a roster you expect them to be bad. But if we're keeping it a stack with ourselves, I projected them to be like the 12th seed this year. I could have swore. And that's just me thinking maybe the Jazz would have been worse. But I'll say this. It's a close. I thought they were maybe going to be around the 12th seed this year. And the fact that they're the worst team again, and there are a lot of, you know, just disgusting basketball being played and a lot of things that we just don't agree with, I have to give them at least a D. I'm sure a lot more.
I mean, maybe a C was being.
Yeah, even that's a. If you're on Twitter, that's Ed in the Fast Lane levels of optimism right there. Yeah. Maybe he would have gave him a B. But shout out to Ed; he's a good guy. But yeah, I'll give him a D. And
the only reason why I was somewhat like as a team they failed, but like individually, I do see guys like Shingun's a better basketball player, KB's a better basketball player. Like I can see individual improvement, but as a team, I don't see it. So. Maybe that's why I was a little bit more optimistic. But yeah, I mean, a D is fair for me too. Like it's yeah. Like I said, it hasn't been good. So,
but most importantly, the development of Jalen Green, playmaking has gotten a little better. But as a whole, he's the most important player, and I haven't seen the improvement that I want to see out of Jalen. And that's what's most important with this team. You gotta get your franchise guy going, and they failed to do that so far. So that's what I'm looking forward to. That's our midseason review. As always, I'm your host Brad. Again, Instagram and Twitter. Brad on NBA, all your favorite stats, highlights. I always got you there. If you're still with us, we appreciate you guys. Make sure to subscribe. We're trying to get to 500 followers. We're almost there. We'll be there soon. So I appreciate you guys for all the support. And that's me for this episode.
And as always, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at @BiasHouston. Like Brad said, we appreciate you guys tuning in to us every week. We'll be back next time.